Welcome to the Walled Garden Podcast. Here, we nourish the gardens of our minds, one meaningful conversation at a time. If you'd like to find out more, go to thewalledgarden.com. Thanks for joining us. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Walled Garden Podcast. So I wanted to share with you guys a few events that we have coming up in the Walled Garden. Firstly, tomorrow on the 23rd of January, for me at least, in the morning we're having our third Soul Searching with Seneca meetup of the year. Now that's going to be focusing on Seneca's letter number 33 on the futility of learning maxims. If you haven't already read that letter before, definitely go check it out. It's quite a wisdom-packed letter. Lots to chew on there, lots to think about. And so we're going to be discussing that letter in our meetup tomorrow. The next couple of things that I wanted to mention are we have a live interview and Q&A with Professor Scott Aiken coming up. The topic is going to be on the Stoic God and imitating the divine. So if that sounds like something you'd be interested in coming along to, we're going to be having about a 45 to 50 minute interview with Professor Scott Aiken, and then we're going to be having about a 30 or 40 minute Q&A session with him, which is going to be really amazing, a great opportunity for some deep learning for all of us. So that's coming up on Thursday, the 2nd of February here in Australia at 8:30 a.m. And so I'll let you guys do your own calculations for what time that will be for you. And if you want to register for those meetups, you can go to thewalledgarden.com/events and you can register directly there. And that's all in the way of announcements. And I want to introduce to you our guest for today, Jack Stafford. And Jack is a really interesting character with such a fascinating story behind him. And I want to read you a little bit about Jack and then we'll dive into the interview. So Jack Stafford, he is a British singer-songwriter and super troubadour. He grew up in the UK but quickly moved to Amsterdam, where he lived and worked as a copywriter, musician, and fashion designer. However, this led to burnout, so Jack sold all of his possessions and set off on a bicycle tour as a nomadic troubadour. He travelled through 45 countries, playing over 700 house concerts in return for a place to sleep. He recorded many of his crazy adventures in his songs, and the accumulation of his life skills is the unique Pod Songs podcast, where, together with other musical artists from around the world, he interviews special people with selfless service to others and writes a song to bring greater awareness to their work. Jack lives in seclusion in the south of Italy. He is a qualified Ayurvedic practitioner, student of metaphysics, and the Italian representative of the Aetherius Society. And that is Jack Stafford for you. So I'm looking forward to you guys hearing this interview. I had such a good time. I want to thank Jack again for coming on the show. And I really hope that you guys enjoy this interview as much as I enjoyed having it. All right, enjoy. Here's Jack Stafford. Okay, Jack, welcome.
Hello. It's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, man, it is. It's awesome to talk to you, and you know, I've been very impressed taking a look at your work, just at the breadth and depth, you might say, of what you're, you know, what you're trying to tackle here. It's quite a feat, and I guess I'm going to throw it over to you, like I do with so many people who come on for the first time. You know, just talk to me and my audience about who you are, what your story is, and we'll pick up somewhere along the way.
Okay, who is Jack Stafford?
Yeah.
Sure, well, I'm a super troubadour. Well, I was traveling around the world playing house concerts. And I did a lot in Australia, actually, and New Zealand. I've traveled by bicycle. I cycled from all the way up the East Coast.
Amazing.
As far as Cairns. Yeah, and then I got a boat to Darwin.
You're one of those crazy people that I see riding their bikes along the, and I think where are they traveling to? Yeah, sometimes you see people and they're clearly on an adventure, you know, somewhere far, far away. Yeah, amazing.
Ah, with a, mine had a bicycle sticking out the top. Yeah, so I did all that. I did about many years going around the world, and I settled in Italy because my girlfriend's Italian, and we would, why not? You know, if you get offered to come to Italy, you do it, don't you? Especially if love is the ticket. So I've been here ever since, you know, but what with COVID, no more traveling. I don't have to tell you what it's like down in Australia. I'm sure you know. So the only thing to do is start a podcast. And this is what I did. I was doing podcasts just to promote my last album. And that was fantastic. Really enjoyed it. Coming on, talking to people about myself for an hour. Hey, it's everyone's dream. And so I thought I could start my own podcast. And, you know, I'm a songwriter. I write songs about people I meet. I've done that going around the world. So when I have a podcast, I do that. So I write songs about the people on my show. I had 100 episodes in the first year because nothing else to do.
Hmm.
And I'm really proud of that. Yeah, we did. So we're now on 101 episodes, and it's slowed down a lot now. I've taken it easier.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I'm trying to focus more on promotion, and but it's been a great journey, and I'm having a wonderful time interviewing, speaking to people all around the world.
Yeah, man. And so it is true that in a year you wrote 100 songs.
Yeah.
What's the process there? That's a pretty wild achievement for any artist, you know.
Sure. Well, there's two ways to write a song. You can sit down and do it in a collaboration or a mathematical way. You know, you write down, you're making it rhyme, or you can just channel it. You know, you can be so inspired, so hyped up after an interview that it just, you pick up the guitar and it flows through you. And then you work out the lyrics and the details later. And that's always the way I work. So in that golden hour after an interview, I do the song straight away. Then I record it to a click track and send it to, then I go to a studio with musicians once a week, and they add on all the, because these are proper produced songs. You know, it's not just acoustic guitar. Mm. So I do have a team to do that. Otherwise that would be too much for me.
Mm. Amazing. Okay. So you tend to write these songs in the hour after the interview. You call that the golden hour.
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, what is your kind of creative process like when you're writing these songs? Cause for everybody else who's listening, I mean, you know, they might be lucky to write a song a week or a song every few days, but you're thinking, okay, like 100 in a year, that's pretty crazy. Like, what is your specific creative technique process for writing?
Get out the way. Yeah. Get out the way. So I used to write songs when I was up before, you know, if I'd met a fun guy and had a great night. When I was traveling, I wrote so many songs just because you're in the moment, the universe is talking through you, and then you're inspired. And I think that's what happens with a lot of bands, is that they get, or musicians, they try to get the conscious mind, because you have the conscious mind in the middle, you have the subconscious underneath, and then you have the higher conscious mind, your higher mind. And with Western psychology, they make a mistake in that they group the lowest, the highest, and the lowest of our minds together into the subconscious. But that's inaccurate. The subconscious is responsible for, right now, when my body is digesting, you know, vitamin K and taking it to a cell in my body, and it knows my heart rate and the blood levels in my brain. That's my subconscious. But my higher mind, which is what writes the songs and what channels through me, is when my conscious mind is not involved. So that's what I really try to do, is to get out of the way.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, I understand that. That's certainly good advice for artists, right? And I think that artists in general will understand that more than perhaps people who aren't in the creative professions, right? However, it's kind of, wouldn't you say it's something that is almost, I understand that everybody can get into that flow state, right?
Flow, that's the word I was going to use, yeah.
So it could be, I mean, an accountant can get into a flow state in accounting if that's their true, you know, that's the thing that exactly. They do, you know. And so I'm interested that, you know, after the interview, you feel like that's just that golden hour where, you know, the inspiration is flowing through. And it sounds like you're you're the kind of person who knows how to catch those moments. So isn't it kind of like getting out of the way at the right time as well?
Yeah, and also because I'm doing 3 or 4 interviews a week, if I have to go back to that, like I have actually missed a few now. I've missed 2 or 3 from ones I've done. And I've got to go back to that, I'm going to have to get up so much energy. I'm going to listen to the whole interview again, listen to the study, the guest, get my energy up again, and then, or maybe read about it the night before, and then wake up really early in the morning, go into the, when the sun's, you know, rising and the dew is on the grass, and I'm before my mind is woken up, I can tune into the ethers then. And I was thinking about the subject the night before, so that should flow through, but it's a lot more effort to do that. I should have just done it straight away.
Yeah. You've got to catch that moment of inspiration. And yes, I find that very fascinating. And just as an artist as well, I think it's, you know, this is advice that I got from my kind of more artistic mentor, Sharon LaBelle. She just said, you know, get up every morning and the first thing that you do is write. And I think specifically what she was trying to say was find a time when you know that the inspiration is going to be there and just build that habit. And do you feel like over time that habit of music making has strengthened as you have understood the right times to be engaging in that and built that? I guess, do you feel like it comes easier and easier as you build that strong habit and time and place for this sort of music making?
Yes, definitely. Yeah. I think also you become an outlet for consciousness to flow through as well. People know that that's a place they can get songs out. So it's just a muscle as well. I can just tune into that, you know. Maybe you can tune, if you're counting, you can tune into figures like you say, but that's what I can tune into. So because mind, it's important to understand on a metaphysical level that mind, we exist in a sea of mind, and we have lodged, we're more evolved than a dog or a cat, because we have lodged a higher level of mind in our structure. And we exist in a sea of mind. So you could have people sitting in a room, and the difference between a great painter or a great writer or a great artist or a great thinker or a scientist is they can tune in their radio to a higher level of mind. This frequency is not that we're all picking up in externally. Your mind is a radio. So that's important to understand, is that, so I could be sitting in the same room as great scientist, and they're tuning into different frequencies. It's like, you know, FM, AM radio, Wi-Fi, Bluetooth. These are all these different frequencies existing between my hands right now. But I cannot believe you. That just is impossible that they are. That all those radio signals are in between my hands now. It's just, I don't think so.
Yeah. Yeah, I certainly am interested in this idea that, you know, you mentioned how, okay, you can be in a room full of people, for example, who are actively listening to you, right? I think that this is something that musicians get a real sense of, right? Because we stand in front of an audience, and I think Joe Rogan has talked about this, about even with comedy, he feels like it's actually the art of almost a meditation that everybody goes into, or a state where everybody is locked in together, a hypnosis. And when the comedian is so locked in with the audience, something happens there where they become one thing. And I feel very much the same when I'm performing, and, you know, when the band is locked in with each other and we're all listening and we're all paying attention, while at the same time, you know, letting go and allowing the art to happen. And when that happens, it's like that brings the audience into that mind as well. And it does become one thing, because when the band starts to really go at it, you know, you can see the audience, especially in a jazz concert, something like that, everybody will, you know, just get right into it. And that's kind of amazing. And there's this other thing that I was thinking. I remember I was, having dinner with my wife one day at this beautiful little Japanese restaurant. And I remember thinking that humans have this strange ability to almost create a soul outside of what we would consider ourselves, right? So you go into a restaurant and there's beautiful art on the walls, and there's certain ways that they've set it up, and there's, you know, certain ways that they set the tables and that they bring the food and all this sort of stuff. And you think that all contributes to almost like the spirit of a room, you know, and you walk in and you cannot help but be enchanted by those sorts of things. And we have to think that's very strange that the human mind does that, right? That we participate in the outer world like that, and we find these new states almost, right?
Yeah, there is a group soul for every organization and every people, and I know what you're saying about that atmosphere that they say in Holland gezellig, and in Scandinavia they say hygglig. Is that wonderful atmosphere? It's almost tangible when you walk into a nice place. And that's the reason I can't do online concerts, because I've done live concerts like you. So there's no soul if I do it. I've been spoiled because I speak to a lot of musicians, and they haven't done live concerts before, but they're thriving. And also, interestingly enough, I was speaking to another podcast host, and he's always done in-person interviews. He traveled around in a van all around America doing in-person interviews. And now he can't go back to this. He says he used the analogy of sex with a condom. He couldn't. It just felt terrible to him. So,
yeah.
Once you've experienced this one-on-one, having Zoom and having this sterile conversation, to me, it's fine. It's all I've ever known with podcasting.
Yeah.
But I imagine if I'd been spoiled by meeting you in person, I imagine it's a completely different vibe, and we'd be connecting more on a not just a visual. I can see you now. We're having a visual verbal, but there's this non-verbal communication that we'd be having and connecting in person.
Yeah, it's it really is an open question, like how much we are missing out, you know, that we're not face to face. And I think that in part is why you see such massive success for podcasts like Joe Rogan Experience, where he just sits down with people, you know, face to face. and you see this with other podcasts as well. Some of my favorite people to listen to is when they're just like right there face to face. The energy is, you know, right up there. And it's just quite amazing. And I really want to talk to you about your time traveling around the world and doing these house concerts, because that's quite a feat. How many house concerts did you end up doing?
I don't know. I must have been like 700 or something like that. It's just a number, because you're doing it every night. So, you know, you roll up. Every day is a movie. You know, every day you wake up in the morning, it's a different town, and it's just a fantastic experience. And sometimes you don't have them in a rain. I used to start with couch surfing, the website, and then there's another one for cyclists called Warm Showers, because I was touring by bicycle. So these people they're open to hospitality, and they would let me come and then I'd say, you know, invite your friends around and we do a concert. So even if it wasn't publicized, and I just sing for my supper. Or sometimes it was publicized in advance, and I did a proper. But in the end, I stopped playing venues, because there's no connection with the audience in a venue. When people are sitting around me, and just going back to what you were saying earlier, people sitting around me, and there's this tangible energy, and I can just stop in a song and talk to them and have a chat, and they're right there, you know, making eye contact. And if one person isn't enjoying the show, I go and sit on their lap or something. Or, you know, it's incredible compared to a venue. It's just unless you play rock or something, but if you're seeing a singer-songwriter, then it's just a terrible way to see a musician. A house concert is it's the best. Plus, you're playing these people, you get better attendance, because these people had never had a concert in their homes before. Mm-hmm. So all their friends came along. Whereas if I'm going down to the bar to see a singer-songwriter, would you come and talk through the show with me? And there's no comparison.
Okay, well I want to talk to you about this more, because I want some really tangible advice for how you'd start doing something like this, because I as an artist really want to try this, and I know that other people will as well, because I will be moving to the States this year, hoping as long as the US visa gives the US consulate gives me my visa, which should be fine, hopefully. Maybe I'm on a few lists, but so basically when I go to the States, I've already talked to people about this, because I know a few people around the States who I've coached or who I've had on the podcast, and I'm absolutely going to be couch surfing with them as I kind of go around and take a look around the place. What is the process that, you know, gets you to start doing that? Okay, so you say you went on couchsurfing.com. I haven't known much about that process? You know, do you pay people to go into their homes, or did you just offer, let me do a concert and have me for free there, or something like that?
Yeah, there are these hyper-social people in every society. They're the central, the fulcrum of each group. And you go on the city group pages, the chat rooms, or also meetup.com and offer your services. But probably the best way to start is have one in your own home of yourself, and then invite other artists in as well. You know, it's the same with couchsurfing. Before you start traveling around, you have to host. You've got to give before you get, just so you build up some references. There are websites like concertsinyourhome.com in America, as one I know about, and there's some others probably. But yeah, just get it going. Make yours a good one. And then people will say, you know, I'm having a birthday coming up. Would you like to do it in my home? You introduce people to the idea, and then it spreads like wildfire.
Amazing. And how many, so you said you did 700 concerts. How long was this period of time?
In a couple of years, probably did 400 in 2 years. But yeah, I mean, I was going around every night. So I was living on the road, so I didn't have a home. Yeah. So every night was a show. It depends on how you define an audience of one or an audience of two.
Yeah.
Because I was singing for my supper.
Yeah, look, yeah. I mean, look, sometimes an audience of two that are really paying attention, you know, can be better than a whole room of people just eating their dinner, you know. Sometimes that can be.
Oh, it's because I got booked in a tour, you know, I booked a tour. So I do a tour, and when I didn't have a night in a venue, I'd do a house concert. But really, you know, those were disasters, because a stranger comes into town and you've got no name. You're not known, no one comes to see you. But if, like I said before, if it's in Ted's living room, Ted has banned a singer in his living room, I'm going to go.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's the way to go.
That's quite amazing. And were you writing a lot of music over this period as well?
Oh yeah, because I met people, you know, say logging protesters, and you're fascinated by his story. And so you just, you know, you're up. So you write a song. Or all sorts of activists and just people I met, and the stories about our adventures, just kind of a doc, like a troubadour, you know. That's what you did. I took the news from the last village to the next one as I arrived on my donkey. Probably that's why I did in the last life. Just carried on.
Well, I didn't actually, like, I'd heard the word troubadour before, but I had to look it up before. And correct me if I'm wrong, but troubadour is a kind of like a traveling lyric poet. What's the tradition of the troubadour? It's French, right?
I think it's a French word. Yeah, because you've got to remember, you know, we moan about our music being on Spotify, but you know, if you think back through the annals of music, you know, it's CDs and then vinyl before that, and then, you know, it used to be sheet music. You'd release your new track, drop your new track by posting out all the sheet music all around the country. But that was a flash in the pan. Before, people just used to, you'd have musicians come to town, you know, and entertain you, and you want to hear the lyrics, you want to hear jokes, you want to hear stories. These are ballads, these are the folk songs. This is what we used to do, you know. You mean, sure, you can have your parlor music where you're playing a nice harpsichord, but that's probably for the posh folks. The regular folks, they will want to see, you know, dancing, bawdy jokes, and comedy songs and troubadour songs. So
yeah, quite amazing. I want to know what you noticed about the people who had you in their homes, because you've mentioned a few things so far. Firstly, you've mentioned logging protesters, activists. Okay, so now I'm starting to get a picture. These are kind of probably the more artistic people in society. They tend to kind of play in those worlds. Also, you mentioned that they're kind of like the centers of their communities, because they're always looking for, you know, kind of these new opportunities, these new experiences, welcoming people into their homes. What else did you notice about the types of people who, I guess, you had the best time with out on the road?
Yeah, it was so many interesting people. I'm having to think back now. Let me check on my website to remind myself of what I've done, because, you know, I've written 500 songs. So I don't remember. I just don't remember. It's 10 years ago that I was touring troubadour.
Yeah.
But
what ended up making you decide to stop that path?
I was exhausted.
Yeah.
I was very discombobulated, and you know, it sounds great talking about it now, but having no home is tiring. Always on the go, yeah. Always moving around. Every night having that get to know you conversation. I just got really run down.
Yeah.
I wouldn't do it again. I wouldn't go back to that life.
Yeah.
I live now in relative seclusion in the south of Italy, just doing podcasts and writing songs about that. You know, I've got my skill. I've earned my stripes, so to speak. So
yeah.
But I did 40 countries in 2 years. So yeah, I wrote songs about busking, a lot about my girlfriend who I met on the road. She was very inspiring. I just wrote Coffee Lover for her. We're busking. So we had no money. So I wrote a song because she was Italian. She needs coffee. So I wrote a coffee song. So we'd walk into a cafe and a bar, you know, I'd ask them to turn the stereo off. I'd stand on a table and play a song. And, you know, I'd get a free coffee and a free tea because I'm British and I need a tea every time because nobody does that.
Wow.
So, yeah, there's songs about dumpster diving, song about Queensland Rail.
I'm going to have to listen to that song, definitely.
Yeah, because Queensland Rail, because I played on the radio every time we go into a town, and then I'd call up the local radio and say, you know, hey, Jack Stafford's in town.
Amazing.
They'd have me on the radio to do a show. So everyone in the town would hear me. So, yeah. And then they would say, who wants a concert with Jack tonight? And then I'd always get a gig through that before going on the radio. Song about going around the Gulf of Carpentaria. It's just documenting all my travels through my songs, really.
Mm.
It was a lyrical diary.
That's quite a feat, and you know, you seem to have a very strategic mind when going through these things about, you know, what can I do to make sure that I get a home tonight. You remind me of there's this great interview between Tim Ferriss and the journalist Cal Fussman, where Cal basically talks about his time traveling for about 10 years throughout Europe, and he would get on a train every day to get to the next town, or every week to get to the next town. And he said that he had to pick a person to sit next to in the train based on the knowledge that he had to be invited back to their home by the time they got to the next town. And so he wouldn't pick like the hot girl who he wanted to talk to. He'd pick like the old lady who he could talk to about like her jam recipe or something like that. And then, you know, he'd get invited. And you seem to have this very strategic approach of saying, okay, go into the town, get on the radio, ask people, you know, go on couch surfing. Or what are some other strategies that you use to make the most out of this and to make sure that you were getting into places and getting seen and heard?
Yeah, we go to start busking in the town as well. Just put a sign down, say, traveling troubadours, the peddling troubadours.
So you say we? Multiple?
I did invite people to travel with me. Other. Cool. It became sort of a band, yeah. Mm. So, because, yeah, when we were cycling around Australia, there was two other guys. And so we'd just be, and I mean, we went to thrift shops and bought, you know, old ladies' clothes, you know, super bright, colorful clothes. So we looked like a band of minstrels. And yeah, we just would play busk on the street, and people would, you know, these are small towns in Australia, for example. I mean, people were impressed, you know.
Yeah.
The word gets that don't go to big towns. I mean, this is not city stuff. No, in a city, everyone's got, you know, eyes down. You know, you've got to rock up in a small town. A bigger town, you have to go on the radio. Smaller towns, everyone knows you after the first morning. I mean, because you're outside the coffee shop, we would find a place to sleep by lunchtime, just because people were, you know, they were so friendly. So you're in a small town. You've got that small town vibe, and nothing interesting has happened there. People wanted to come with us. People started cycling with us. Forrest Gump, you know what it's like. Mm-hmm. Because you're this crazy bunch of dudes cycling around playing music. So yeah. It's like a rock band. yeah, but much more accessible. So, yeah, I mean, if you just do it tomorrow, it's just, it's an instant story because you have this energy about you that, you know, there's this rhythm through the day because the bakeries, you know, you can go to the bakeries at the end of the day and they're all giving away the bread. And, you know, there's the dumpster diving as well. And, you go to the supermarket, back of the supermarkets, you get food. So we'd have more food. We had more food than we know what to do with, you know, and getting a place to eat, sleep was no problem because everyone would sleep on the floor on couches. You know, everyone has a floor, you know, so it was no trouble. You know, the universe just opened its arms to us and you just ride on a wave around the world.
Yeah.
But it's tiring.
I love this story because it's inspiring because I think it's the kind of life that a lot of people dream of having, at least a few years of that adventure.
When you're young and dumb enough.
Young and dumb enough.
I wouldn't do it now. I'm too fussy. I want a nice bed. I don't want to, I want.
Well, it certainly is a stage that people enjoy going through. It's almost like a rite of passage, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
I'm just going to go close my blinds quickly because this is the time of morning where it looks like an angel is coming through the window with the sun.
I saw that. Yeah. I thought you were getting I was inspiring you.
Okay. So I do want to know though, I'd love to know, if you can pick favorite country that you visited, perhaps even favorite town and why. And then I want to jump back into pod songs and ask you about some of your favorite guests who you've talked to. But I'll start with favorite country and favorite town if you can pick one.
Oh, well, I met my girlfriend in New Zealand and that has a place in my heart. It's Australia is great, but it's, you know, the pockets are very spread apart, whereas New Zealand is super compact. It's different in terrain, different in people. Drivers are terrible though. They try to kill you on the bicycle. But you can stop and hitchhike. I mean, you can hitchhike anywhere. So the people are good like that. You can watch for those huge logging trucks. But yeah, so we used to hitchhike. We get tired, we'd hitchhike. You just hold it up a front wheel and then stop and start chatting. And then usually the place you would hitchhike would let you sleep on their couch as well. So yeah, New Zealand was great for that because it's kind of, like I say, small town, but small country.
Yeah.
And it was, I don't know what it's like now, but it's 10 years ago. So it was a great experience. Yeah. It was a kind of a golden period then.
I wonder if you could elaborate a little bit more on the small town thing. Cause I've spent a lot of time in small towns in Australia. Cause my parents, their company is basically they go around to small towns in Australia and they sell Christmas decorations for shop front windows of all things. It's a very jolly business, but my dad has always avoided the big cities when it comes to his business. One of the reasons is, you know, it turns out that country people are just easier to talk to sometimes, you know. They're always going to have the business owner in the store. You know, they're always there willing to have a chat in the middle of the day. But that there is a difference between, you know, when you're taking your, whether it's your product or your service or your art, you know, into these places versus the big cities. What are some other things that you think that is? Like, what is it about the small town that, you know, makes such a difference for an artist?
Well, people were bored. That was a big thing. Yeah,
I mean, yeah, just by necessity, they're looking for something to do. Please, I get that. Yeah,
yeah, because in a city, it's all about bandwidth, and that's also something I learned about. Because I've never been homeless and I've never been hungry, and even when I was traveling around the world, we were busking. But you know, I had a bank account if I really wanted to. I had, we were in this mindset with the guys. We were just going. So your bandwidth shrinks down. You know, you're focused on that. So I can understand really homeless people and people who are struggling in their lives is that, you know, we were very focused on where we sleep, you know, we've got that, okay, where's to eat, you know, we weren't in we weren't in a bliss state, you know, we were in a more of a worried state, a kind of semi, you know, but that made it exciting, you know, because there was this thing of an adventure, but like I say, it was a bit tiring, but we weren't like, you know, we weren't aesthetics wandering around. You know, we had these cravings. We wanted our beer. We wanted at night. You know, we want excitement, we wanted this and that. So we were bouncing from craving to craving. So I did, this is something I've done this trilogy of albums afterwards, Body, Mind, Spirit. And so I'm evolved more. I do it differently now in a more relaxed way. So, but yeah, going back to what you're saying about small towns is that, yeah, in the cities, everyone is, you know, they've just got, they're over, their bandwidth is also too stretched, you know, too overstimulated, too many options. And you don't have these connections with people. There's more of this stranger factor, you know, you wouldn't speak to a stranger, if somebody's a homeless guy on the street, you would, you know, step over him because, you know, it's not a good, but if that happens in your home street, you know, it's a hugely different experience. So, yeah, I think that's the reason we found it a lot easier in the small towns.
Mm. Yeah, amazing. I love it. And then you moved to Italy, and and you moved there for love, right?
Yeah, I mean that was so. I'm a Rolling Stone, so to settle down with my girlfriend's parents is, you know, it's a bit of a shock because, you know, my Varda's up. I want to be moving. I'm moving. And so I was like a bouncing ball. So I did leave a few times and come back, and I went to India, and then I came back, and then the bouncing ball gradually. And now there's no motion. I'm completely.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Sedentary.
That's an interesting way to put it, as a bouncing ball. And now it's just, yeah, that's where you decided to fall. And your partner from Italy then?
Yeah. She's from this village. So I don't have to do anything. I mean, I'm really, I speak the language eventually just purely by saturation, but you know, the electricity bill, the internet bill, the house, she fixed us up with everything. And so she's an architect. She built me a house.
Wow.
So yeah.
Amazing. Yeah.
I got a good ticket. Yeah.
Yeah, man. I mean, that's perfect for a musician, right? That's great. And yeah. So, okay, beautiful. And so you start doing this Pod Songs podcast, at the start of COVID. Is that when you really began?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Because, you know, it's going back to the city. It's a curse. They say a Chinese curse. May you live in interesting times, because you won't develop spiritually. You won't be able to go inside, you know, all of these problems. So if to be in a small town and be motivated is difficult. I've taken me a long time to be a dynamo in a small city, because you take on the mind of a place, you know, the thoughts of others. It's hard. You do get sucked down. So it was quite difficult for me for that, but now I have got my place and my space, and I am able to be a dynamo in a small town.
Yeah,
and have no distractions. So I was able to do this, start this Pod Songs project, because I didn't have any distractions. I got very into permaculture, and I did go into a long period. You know, I run after things, and I was into other things, but I kind of burnt my interest off there, and I went back to the music, and because on one of my travels, I found spiritual enlightenment in a. I know you found it through the Stoic path. Is it not enlightenment as in a bright light coming down, but as in a framework with which you can work around?
A path that you can walk.
A path. So I found that with the Aetherius Society, which is a spiritual organization I discovered when I was in India, and I said, it's okay. So I really want to have a way to promote in a way, like what you said before, that really focuses, because before I just dropped my music. Mm-hmm. I made my music and it's so good, the world should find it naturally. But fortunately that doesn't happen, as I found out to my cost. So I really said, okay, now I need a way. I've got a message now. I need to communicate. What's the best way? I really asked the universe this question. And I came up with this idea of Pod Songs. I interview famous people. And the best way to become famous is to interview famous people. And that's what Joe Rogan does, what all the people do. So I reached out to all of them, all the people who've been on Joe Rogan, all the people who've been on the top podcasts, and offered to write them a song. And they said yes, because nobody's ever done that before. No, it's like making a movie about you. And I was really surprised people said yes. And I spoke to very famous people. I've spoken to more Harvard professors in the last year than you I can count.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's just grown and grown. And now the next phase is I get guest musicians to come on. So I get famous musicians to write Songs for Famous People, and I release it through my show. And so this is the formula that I hope will be my rocket booster.
Yeah. Amazing, man. Amazing. And who are some of the favorite guests that you've had on so far?
Probably the most famous was Alan Dershowitz, the lawyer, who was Donald Trump's lawyer and Epstein's lawyer. Yeah, I think he was having a bad time. I think he needed some, I think he wanted a song about himself.
Yeah.
That was a real cheerful. He needed cheering up. He came on in sweatpants and he was just down, I think. So yeah. I got him, you know, it's really great. And many other professors and writers and scientists and just people who would never speak to me if I didn't offer them to write them a song. You know how difficult it is to, I'm sure you have a wish list of guests to get on the show and it's a numbers game. You know, you're emailing so many people and so many, few people agree to come on. But if you give, you get, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's such an interesting idea, just to reach out to people and say, I'll write you a song, come on the show. And it's such an interesting angle to have, right? And this is the thing, because you're a creative individual, clearly. And this is something I've been thinking about lately, is that sometimes we can put a box around our creativity and say, okay, creativity, it's for my music or it's for this. But I think one of the most important moments in my life was when I stopped calling myself a jazz trumpeter or a jazz singer and started saying, no, that creativity flows over into other areas. And my job is to figure out exactly where it travels, right? And that creativity traveled into poetry, and it traveled into piano that I, you know, started to take up, and it traveled into all these different areas. And then I started thinking, okay, this creativity flows over into business as well. Let's see what I can come up with as creative ideas that, and every company, every individual who is trying to start something needs a creative individual with them in order to facilitate that new thinking about new pathways that would lead us to our end goal. And what you've demonstrated here is it's like, okay, well, how do I get really interesting guests on my podcast? I'm going to write them a song. Like you say, nobody has ever offered that to them. So of course they're at least going to stop and think, right? should I do this? So I wonder if you could talk to that as well, about like just expanding the influence of your creativity and perhaps how other people can do that as well.
Yeah, I came across this word, Gesamtkunstwerk, as well. It's the German word that means total artwork. Total artwork. So we have dancers in the music videos. We have a painter or an artist come on.
Yeah, I was
YouTube
wondering if
video.
That was you or somebody else. So you're bringing other people into this adventure as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm a conduit. I'm delegating everything. So I hope to delegate the interview soon. if you're interested in another job.
Well, trust me, I have so much on my plate at the moment.
I'm sure you do. I'm sure you do.
I'm currently just going into that phase as well, where I'm bringing people around me and saying, okay, like let's go on this adventure together. And I think that is my biggest weakness, and perhaps you can talk to me about this because I know that you'll have some wisdom to share. My biggest weakness is that I get so bogged down in the tasks that I forget to kind of step back and be the manager sometimes, and just say, okay, you take care of this, you take care of this. Together, we'll all grow this. And I wonder, you know, obviously there's a lot of stuff involved in doing this podcast. I mean, you've got to create the videos, you've got to be emailing people, you've got to, you know, do the interviews, you've got to put all of this stuff together, organize the paintings and all, like there's just so much to do. How do you delegate your time, and how do you set up this business in such a way that everybody is motivated to be moving towards that end goal?
Well, I found that the universe, we're in a classroom, planet Earth. We're in this incarnation to learn things and to master our tasks. Because once we can do a task, we won't, or either our higher selves or our guides, we don't have to do it anymore. If you look in a company, if you can work on the factory floor, if you're very good, you're going to get promoted. Nobody wants the stellar worker on the floor. You supervise other people, and you'll get promoted all the way up to the top. And that's the same with the universe. If you, whatever you get good at, I'm sure if you look back at your life, once you've mastered something, or let's not say master, let's say you're not the best in the world, I know, but you've mastered it to a competent degree to a level that you're supposed to learn in this incarnation, you're going to be moved on to something else. So it's important to do that, you know, to gain mastery. Okay, then the universe will move you along, and it will give you another task to do. So, and that's happened with me. I mean, I've done these songs now. I'm a competent songwriter. So the universe is giving me idea. I've got an idea to bring on other songwriters. So, you know, I'm reaching out to all these musicians, and you know, they're coming on, and they're as flattered as the guests and as inspired as the guests. You know, they're just speaking to a guy now. He's just graduated college, and he did a master's in something related with climate change, and he's super passionate about climate change, and he's a musician, and he's saying to his bandmates, we got to do something, you know, some issue based music, you know. But then out of the blue, I email him and say, you know, would you like to come on and interview someone of your choice and write a song about it? So we can interview he can reach out to anyone now. He's a professor or a climate activist, and we have an in-depth conversation. He's an expert in that, and he can write a conversation, and then we do a whole program with him. You know, we do a music video, release the interview 1 week, next week the song, next week the music video. There's an artist doing the music video, doing a painting about it. There's dancers in the videos. And so, you know, I have a social media calendar, which I give him, but I just have a formula. So I change the name, and then it automatically populates it with the new release date. And so I give that to each artist, and then they go away and they promote the show to their fans diligently, you know, because they're invested in it. So I don't have to do that anymore. I do the interview. Takes me an hour. I edit it quickly. I've got someone approaches me to do the music videos because that's their area of expertise. I've now found someone to do that. So, you know, I'm super streamlined. You know, I've got GMAS to do the emails. You know, I send out thousands of emails with one click.
Yeah.
I'm completely automated because I've mastered each step, and I've come along. I use Descript to edit the audio, edit the podcast. Takes me 10 minutes. You know, it's so I get busier and busier, and then the universe gives me. So the new idea I got today is I was going out cycling. I've got beautiful road climbs here, up the mountains. I always get my ideas when I'm coming down the mountains. So I go up and I'm pumping, I'm flowing, I'm pumping, the brain's blank. And then come down the mountain, wind in the hair, swinging through a sea of mind. And I get pummeled with idea. And the idea I got today was, so I have to do it because I'm interviewing people. I need to do a music magazine. So because I have the interviews of people. So it's a music art activism magazine, you know, like Rolling Stone or something like that, in that format, an online magazine. So because I have the interviews, I just need to edit them a little bit and pick out some quotes and, you know, write a nice intro. And I've got a magazine, so I can have articles about the guests, articles about the musicians, interviews with the artists, painting the picture. Yeah. And so it's sort of this, so I've become a record company because every week I'm releasing now an artist who comes on to do a single with me. And so I'm a record company, and now I'm the Rolling Stone. And then probably the next thing is like have a Netflix series, you know, like Song Exploder made the jump from podcast and to Netflix series. So if they can do it, you know, I can do it. And then who knows, maybe a TV channel. So it's all interviews and documentaries, and there's a whole, you know, I've got a path, I've got an opportunity ahead of me now to develop this, just because I've mastered things and I've put them aside and they kind of run easy, even without getting too many more people on board. But, you know, the people are rushing in to help as I go, but just because it's growing, you know, so.
Yeah. Yeah. So what I'm hearing is systemize, you know, once you've got a process for doing something, make sure that it can be easily replicated by you in a shorter and shorter time period. And I'm certainly noticing this as well on my end, this period of time when you're trying to put something together, and you start to notice that there are a whole bunch of people who really want to get on board in terms of helping you to do something. And I think that like that's the moment when you have to really kick into gear, right? And start accepting these offers of help and start taking people on in the adventure that you've been, you know, working towards. And so, yeah, Jack, I mean, this is very inspiring for, you know, not only for creatives, I think for people who are in business who start to think, okay, like there has to be this creative element of, systemizing so that we can then focus on the most important thing, which is continuing that journey upward and looking for more and more opportunities to expand what we're doing. So,
yeah, and hire people to do what they're already doing.
Yeah,
hire people that want to do that. If you make it, you know, don't hire them and train them. Hire them if they're writing music reviews. Hire them to do that. What they're already doing, you know, hire people to do their passion. So, you know, hire the video girl because she was already obsessed with doing videos. She's doing it for free anyway. So,
yeah.
Amazing. I have all my jobs in a circle, in this flow diagram. So I have
pre-production. Yeah, please explain that.
Pre-production, production, post-production, and promotion. And I promote to the pre-production. So I promote to the guests and musicians. So I feedback in, you know, so I do advertising, you know, online targeted ads to find the guests. So there's this cycle of promotion. So I make sure there's this, the wheel is constantly flowing.
So you do targeted ads online to find guests, you say. What's that about? I have no idea what you'd be doing there.
Well, I do. I advertise on the music magazines as well. So, you know, Rolling Stone with Google ads, you know, display ads.
Yeah.
You can have, you only pay per click, but you get the display ads so that the people see you in the magazine, you know, without having to pay. And then I do a lot of email promotion to drive a researcher who finds the email addresses of guests constantly, you know, and the email to them promoting the show, and then they will click and also come back and be featured on the show. So there's this constant cycle of promotion.
Yeah, wonderful. Yeah, man. Well, this has been inspiring, and I think you know, not only your creative output, but the way that you're thinking about growing this business and you know, changing lives in the process. I think it's a brilliant thing, and it's also just in the world that we live in at the moment, it's so refreshing to see people really engaging in this kind of activity that really has no downside. I mean, so Jack, thank you so much for coming on the show. Was there anything else that you want to share with the audience before we head off?
Well, I wanted to go back to the Ethereum Society, which I mentioned. You know, I have another podcast called the Mystic Cast, because I'm into metaphysics now. And I have this book called The Nine Freedoms, which has inspired me because I want to promote the Ethereum Society. So Podsongs is a vehicle for promoting the teachings of the Ethereum Society. And I recommend people check that out. We don't really have time to go into it now, and it is quite far out. But if you're on a search for truth, you know, maybe it resonates with you, and you've just hit that one, hearing that one word. Maybe you've heard it in another time and space. Another place, maybe it resonates and you check it out.
Yeah, certainly wonderful. So you said Mystic Cast.
Yeah, Mystic Cast is my podcast, and Aetherius, Aetherius by Dr. George King is the society, and it's given me, you know, I do a lot of practices which have really enabled me to operate like this, and have given me such inspiration and opened all my channels to be a channel.
Yeah, man. Well, thank you very much for that. And thank you for coming on the show. Thank you for doing what you do. I hope people go and listen to Podsongs and to the Mystic Cast as well. And keep at it. And I hope to talk to you very soon. Yeah.
Thanks, mate. It's been a pleasure.
You've been listening to the Walled Garden Podcast. If you'd like to attend any of our free meetups and events, or if you'd like to get one-on-one mentoring with either Sharon LaBelle, Kai Whiting, or myself, just go to thewalledgarden.com. But for now, don't forget to nourish those gardens in your mind.